Go! Brightly, the horse danced laterally left, swung his hindquarters around, danced right. Pretty filly. Amused, impressed, Bodine watched as a kind of gleam came into the horse's eyes before he did the equine version of a manly swagger back to Bodine. Kiss the girl. Sundown lowered his head, rubbed his glowing lips over Bodine's cheek. You're a charmer, Bodine said, pressing her own lips to the gelding's cheek. You trained him? You always had a way, but this is really something.
I picked up some tips from the experts on my travels, but I'm working with Prime here. Absolute Prime.
I sure wouldn't argue. And love. The sort she knew very well that bloomed between horse and human shined in Callan's words. Do you do any trick riding? You used to do some. The quick grin Callan aimed had, by Bodine measure, a hefty dose of flirt in it.
Want me to show off now?
I'm just thinking how we get a lot of families, a lot of kids on the weekends, and more yet when summer comes. A little show in the paddock by the BAC, some fancy riding, ending with the tricks he can do. They'd eat it like ice cream.
Maybe.
Say a half hour and another half hour to let the kids ask questions, pet the horse. You'd get paid extra. If you want to think about it, I'll see where it would best fit.
Sundown butted Callan's shoulder as if to say, I'm in.
I can think about it.
Good. Then we'll talk. Do you need help with the horses?
I can manage well enough.
Then I need to get back. She started out, turned, walked backward as she spoke. You're a good teacher, Skinner. I never figured you for the patience.
I spent some time developing it.
Considerable, I'd say.
When she turned around again, Callan admired her long legs until she moved out of sight.
Patience ain't everything, he said to his horse. Maybe next time I should kiss the girl.
Sundown let out a sound no one would have mistaken for anything but a laugh. Bodine squeezed all she could into the rest of the day, and the morning after. She made her calls, her appointments. With the rare move of closing her office door, she assured herself of enough uninterrupted time to adjust the schedule to compensate for having Etta and Abe off the roll, at least for a few days. It pleased and relieved her that not a single soul she shifted around complained. After begging a container of chicken soup from the dining hall kitchen, she made the trip out to see Abe and Etta. Heated the soup herself to make sure they ate, while Etta insisted she was fine. Once Bodine got home, missing dinner yet again, she snagged the pork chop meal out of the warmer, settled down with it and her laptop to run a last check on the people she hoped to hire. She ate with one hand, worked the keyboard with the other, and looked up with her mouth full when her mother came into the kitchen. Bodine said,
I thought I heard you come in. You oughtn't to work so late all the time, my baby.
Bodine swallowed. Everything went to hell. I'm fixing it.
You always do. I just got off the phone with Etta. She sounds a little tired, a little sheepish about it. I think I'm going to have some of that wine, too. She told me you went over there with soup, warmed it up for them.
On her way to get a glass, Maureen paused to kiss the top of Bodine's head.
You're a good girl.
Scared me. She always seems so sturdy. She's not going to need surgery, but she's got to take medication and make some lifestyle changes, diet, exercise.
We'll see she takes better care of herself.
After sitting, Maureen poured her wine, added a little more to Bodine's glass. That goes for you, too. More sleep, regular meals. Ma and I, and your dad, didn't start up the Bodine Resort to see you work all day and half the night.
Special circumstances.
Aren't there always? Maureen said in her placid way.
No, really.
But I'm working right here to smooth it out.
I've got 5 people coming in tomorrow. I work fast, for interviews. And 1 more coming in the day after.
6? Jessie told me she was talking to Chelsea tomorrow.
I have something to say there, Maureen added. I know she's Jane Lee Puckett's niece, and I know you and Mrs. Puckett go back.
More than that. Though that has weight.
Jane Lee's been a sister to me since my own... since my own took off the day after my wedding and broke our mother's heart.
Maureen took a deep sip of wine, then a deep breath. She's family.
I won't remind you she changed your diapers and Chase's and Rory's, come to that, the same as I changed her children's.
That's family, and that matters.
I know that, Mom.
Maureen simply aimed a look, the one that could, and did, shoot down any protest, explanation, or excuse.
That's not all I have to say about it.
Chelsea's smart, and bright, and well-mannered. She gave up a good job to come back home when her family needed her.
That's quality. So it seems to me you'd be foolish not to hire her.
She held up a hand before Bodine could speak.
It's your decision to make. We put you in charge because you're smart and bright and fairly well-mannered yourself. And you not only wanted it, you worked for it. But that's what I have to say about it.
I think it's important that Jessica interview her and have some serious say in anyone we hire to work with her.
That's why you're in charge, too, because you're right about that. I expect Jessie's no fool and won't disprove that with Chelsea.
5 more?
Waitstaff, housekeeping, a horseman, and a masseuse. We don't necessarily need the extra at Zentown right now, but it would give her time to learn how we do things. And I liked her application. The others are necessary, most especially the housekeeping and horses. In fact, I could use another qualified instructor for the ring, as Abe's taking some time now to tend to Etta, and that's just what he should do. I could ask Maddie to come in once or twice a week, just for lessons, but I worry she'd overdo something.
Try her once a week, and make it clear you'll boot her if she overdoes anything or gets on a horse.
That's a good compromise. One she'd have come up with if her brain hadn't been on overload all day. Callan took Abe's lessons again today. I walked in at the tail end of one yesterday and was surprised at how good he was at it. I never thought of him as a teacher.
Hidden depths, Maureen smiled.
He was never as wild as some wanted to think. And Cal was one of the some.
Maybe. I was more impressed with his horse. A young buckskin gelding. He does tricks.
I heard about that, but I'd like to see for myself.
I asked him to think about doing some performances at the BAC paddock. Adults would love it, and kids would go crazy for it.
You're always thinking, Beau. It's why I'm the boss.
The next morning, Bodine met with the housekeeper applicant at 9 sharp. She liked what she saw, what she heard, so she called one of the housekeeping staff in to give the applicant a tour of an empty cabin.
Beth will bring you back when you're done. Come see me after, Yvonne. Tell me what you think.
Bodine shifted from her office to the dining hall, where her manager was interviewing a hopeful waiter. The applicant looked younger than his 21 years. He wore a white dress shirt with a string tie tight around his nervously bobbing Adam's apple. Their longest-running waitress sat across from him, arms folded, gaze narrowed.
We do things a certain way around here, and that way is work. Don't have a table to serve, you bus another. Things are slow, you do set up, fill condiments. What you don't do is lollygag.
I'm a hard worker, ma'am.
Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I show lollygaggers the door right quick. Why do you want to work here?
I need a good job, ma'am. To save up to go back to school, get my college degree.
Why do you have to go back? Why aren't you still there?
He flushed a little, face turning pink under his straw-colored hair.
My folks helped out as much as they could, and I worked at the Bigsby Cafe like it says in my resume. But it's costly, and I need to work, save up, to go back and finish. The Bodine Resort's a fine place to work, and it's closer to home than Missoula.
Bodine saw Carrie Ann soften, but doubted the poor boy did.
Did you keep your grades up?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
What are you studying?
I'm majoring in education. I want to teach. Elementary level.
He flushed deeper.
I want to help form and inform young minds.
Is that so?
Yes, ma'am.
Carrie Ann let out one of her harumphs, cut her gaze toward Bodine.
I'm going to take you over to the feed bag, show you some ropes. You don't prove to be an idiot, you'll come back here and talk to Sylvia and HR about your paperwork.
Are you hiring me on? Unless you prove to be an idiot.
Get your coat on, it's cold out.
She rose, walked over to Bodine.
He'll do.
I'll tell Sylvia to be ready for him. When she started off to do just that, she ran into Jessica coming out.
Bo, perfect. I want you to meet Chelsea.
We've met, Chelsea said.
Bodine studied the pretty doe-eyed brunette.
I'm sorry, I don't remember. I know your aunt and uncle. I had my 13th birthday party here. You took us on our trail ride. I got my first real kiss from a boy I thought I'd marry and have 6 kids with after that ride, so it sticks in my memory.
What happened to the boy?
It turned out he just liked kissing girls, something my 13-year-old self didn't understand or appreciate.
It's nice to see you again. Bodine. Jessica put an arm around Chelsea's shoulder.
I love her. I want her for my own.
I don't think you mean you just like kissing girls, so I'm assuming you're hired, Chelsea.
Thank you. Both of you. I want you to take note I'm not jumping up and down and squealing, which demonstrates my maturity and decorum, because inside I'm doing just that.
Oh, and there went a cartwheel.
That got a laugh out of Bodine.
I really want to work here. I really think I can do good creative work here.
Chelsea paused when Rory strolled toward them with another man at his side.
Looks like the beautiful women club's in session, Rory said.
My brother Rory, sales and marketing. This is Chelsea Wasserman.
You're Jane Lee's niece, Rory shot out a hand. She always says how pretty you are, but I figured she was being a doting aunt.
Chelsea's coming on as an assistant in events, Jessica told him. So you'll be seeing more of her.
Glad to hear it. Oh, Bo, this is Esau LaFoy. Sal said you've got him down for your 10 o'clock.
Yes, I do.
I'm just a little early. I'd be happy waiting out in the lobby until you're finished and ready for me.
He wasn't much older than the new waiter, Bodine mused. But she didn't think he'd blush. His eyes, a hazel that edged toward green, stayed steady and respectful.
No need for that. Come on into my office, she gestured, led the way.
Though they had some wear on them, he'd shined up his boots. He also wore clean Levi's with a western-style checkered shirt, a fleece-lined denim jacket, and a black ridge-top hat, which he took off, politely, and set in his lap when he took the chair she offered.
So, Esau, you're from the Garnett area.
I am. Like my daddy, and his daddy before him. Most call me Easy, Miss Longbow.
Easy. You've done some traveling.
Here and there. I followed the rodeo a while. Picked up ranch work when I needed. The names I gave you in that file you got there will tell you I know how to work, and I know horses.
Why did you give up the rodeo circuit?
The fact is, I couldn't much afford to keep with it. It's costly if you don't hit in the money regular, and I took a couple of hard spills. On that,
My pa's getting older, and I come to realize if I got laid up, he wouldn't have anybody to help him out when he needed. We got a few acres some south of Garnett. He's a tough bird and takes pride in it, but in some years, maybe he won't be able to do all he does. The work here can be sporadic during the winter season. You might not get 40 hours a week. I'll take what I can get. Do you have your own mount? Not right now, as I had to sell him off. I could maybe get one, if you want.
He smiled when he said it, showing a chip in his left incisor and a kind of dopey, affable charm. He has a good face, Bodine thought. A little tough, a little weathered, like a lot of cowboys who spent hours in the saddle, under the sun, in the wind. He kept his hands still. They showed the kind of calluses she expected from someone who worked with horses. She'd already had a background check run, and he'd come up clean. High school dropout, but as he'd said, and those in his file confirmed, he knew horses. It's not required for you to have your own mount. We have our stock, and we bring on more in the spring. Have you ever taught horsemanship? He opened his mouth, shut it again, and took his time.
I want the job, so it's hard to say no. I can't say I've spent much time showing anybody how to ride. Was a girl I met in Abilene I showed some riding to, but that was for fun, like. Mostly, people I've spent my time with know.
She couldn't call him the brightest bulb in the lamp on the basis of the interview, but he struck her as polite, honest, and amiable enough. And she was in a bind. It's more than working with horses, tending tack, feeding, and grooming. We cater to our guests, and some won't have been on a horse before, or not in years. Trail rides are popular, and those who lead guests out have to learn themselves. How to match the horse and rider, how to watch on the trail to make sure a guest who doesn't know a horse from a giraffe doesn't get into trouble, and has a good experience.
Horses are easier to figure than people, but people aren't that hard, seems to me, if you pay attention.
I can't argue with that. Why don't we go over to the equestrian center? You can have a look at that part of the operation, and we'll meet up with our head horseman. He rose.
I'd be pleased to.
Chapter 5 Bodine managed to get home in time for dinner, avoiding Clementine's wrath and spending the best part of an hour filling her family in on the new hires while they ate.
You rounded up a lot in one day,
Sam commented, sipping at his nightly after-dinner two fingers of whiskey. One more tomorrow, but every one of the hires wanted the job, presented well, and passed muster with the respective managers. She glanced at Chase. With Abe out, I had Callan take a look at LaFoy.
He'd know what to look at. LaFoy,
Sam frowned in thought.
I don't think I know any of that name around here.
He's from around Garnett.
Can't place the name.
Well, we'll see how he works out, but before I left him with Callan, I had a good look myself. How he handled himself, handled the horses, interacted with Callan and Ben, who was working at the time. Before I left them, I told Callan to let me know if he had any reservations. Since he didn't, I hired LaFoy, and I took your advice, Mom, and talked to Maddie about doing a weekly lesson.
I think that's going to work out fine, and I'm happy you liked Chelsea. She's going to be an asset, you mark my words.
I did like her. Jessie, on the other hand, loved her. And I liked that she stayed on for a couple hours, getting her feet wet. Chose initiative.
You told us Mrs. Puckett's niece was smart, Rory put in. You didn't tell us she was hot. Really hot.
Down, boy, Odine muttered, even as Maureen wagged a finger.
You keep your hands and your charming self to yourself, Rory Carter Longbow. But my charm, it just can't be contained.
I've got plenty of rope in the barn to hogtie it if we need to.
Chase finished the meal as he'd started the day with black coffee.
I ought to let you know I talked with Abe this evening.
How's Etta? Bodine asked.
She's doing all right, but this whole business scared him. He's thinking of taking Etta to visit with their son and his family for a week or so over Thanksgiving, and he's thinking about spending a couple weeks with their daughter for Christmas.
He didn't say anything like that to me, Bodine began.
Well, let me finish it out. It seems their kids are pushing for it. And more yet, it came clear to him that once he comes back to work, she's going to do the same. He says he doesn't see a way to stop her. He wants her to have a good stretch of time first, and this, and the trip to Arizona, would do that.
I can understand that, but
he came to me before you,
Chase went on in his quiet steamroller style,
because he wanted to know if I was clear with you putting Cal on in his place, since we hired Cal for the ranch, and it wouldn't just be here and there, or filling a hole now and then, but full-time managing until spring.
Yes, but Chase just lifted a finger, which had Bodine rolling her eyes.
What I said was this. Cal's an asset here. But the way things are, he'd be a bigger asset to the resort, so, and Dad agrees, we're fine with letting you have him through the winter if that's what works. On the condition that that's what Cal wants, too, as it's not what he was hired on for.
Bodine waited, exaggerating the pause. That it?
Yeah.
Do I have any say in it? Chase shrugged.
Your say comes in after, seems to me. If we say no, we're keeping Cal here, that would be that. If Cal says, no thanks, you hired me for this, not that, same thing. So your say comes in after that's settled one way or the other.
Bodine drummed her fingers on the table. And what did Cal have to say about it?
Haven't gotten to that. As I talked to Abe, then got called in to dinner, I figured to run it by him in the morning.
I'll do the running by, thanks all the same.
Fine with me. Don't know why you'd get your back up about it.
In answer, Bodine put on her sweetest and scariest smile. I'll explain it then. Abe should have come to me, as I'm being asked to hold two key positions open from November until April. That's one. He should have come to me to discuss whether I approved taking Callan Skinner as my full-time horse manager from now till April, which is just what you should have told him. Then I decide on all that before, if I decide yes, I come to you and Dad and ask if you can let me have Cal for this length of time. Given that's yes, I ask Callan if he'd agree to that. Chase shrugged again.
Looks to me like we got to the same point, and maybe a little quicker.
Quicker's not the point. Frustrated and a little insulted, Bodine threw up her hands. The ranch and the resort are separate entities. That was the smart and practical decision made back when Nana decided to expand the Dude Ranch. There's paperwork involved, a salary to negotiate, a job description, a contract.
You'd have all that either way, Chase pointed out.
Aw, Bo's just steamed up because Abe came to you instead of her.
Maureen aimed a cool look at her younger son. She's right to be. The men may outnumber the women at this table, but that doesn't give you more weight. And right is right. Abe should have gone to his boss, and that's Bo. I'm going to attribute that mistake to his stress and worry over Etta. I hope you'll do the same, Bodine, and give him some understanding on it. Anger deflated a little. I can. I do, but
the ranch and the resort are, like you say.
Sam continued to sip his whiskey.
They're separate. Your grandmother was smart enough to see, all those years back, that your uncles weren't going to be able to put in all the time and work needed to run a ranch of this size. And none of their boys, or girls, he added with a glance at his wife, showed any interest. So she worked up the Dude Ranch, saw how she could draw on that and keep the working ranch.
He took his time, sipped his whiskey. Not a person sitting at the table would have thought to interrupt.
Then after I came into it, she put her head together with her mother and yours and came up with big plans. No question we've got smart, forward-thinking women in this family. And we have two business enterprises that provide us with the life we want to live, in the place we want to live it. And they both honor your granddaddy's memory. But they're not just business enterprises, and we're never going to forget that.
No, sir, Bodine said. I don't forget that.
I know you don't. Though there are times I miss seeing you around, in the paddocks, in the stable, in the barn. A man can miss his girl.
Daddy.
He can miss her and be proud at the same time. What we can't forget, and don't, is what we have, what we've made, starting with your grandmother, is a community and a family. Abe's worried about his wife and doing everything he can to take care of her, whether or not she wants it. And knowing Etta, she's put up some fight over it. I don't think he meant any disrespect to you by talking it out with Chase first.
He probably didn't. But Bodine still aimed a stare at Chase.
I just talked to the man, and now I've told you what's what. You just let me know what you decide.
I'll do that. She rose. I'm going to take a walk, figure out how to handle all this. Rory waited until Bodine was safely out of earshot.
Geez, what's the big deal? Mucho sensitivo. It's just...
He broke off and withered under his mother's stare.
Until you work in a man's world without a penis, you can hush about it.
You can think about that while you help Clementine clear and wash up.
Yes, ma'am.
Within 5 minutes, Chase sat alone with his father at the table.
I just talked to the man, Chase said again. And I'm offering to let her have, if he's agreeable, our best horseman, one we'd just acquired, for a solid 4 months. It's a balancing act, son. Women, business, family. It's all a balancing act. How about you and me go out on the front porch? Smoke a couple of cigars and complain about women. Doing that now and again helps the balance. I'll get my coat.
Bundled in her own coat, Bodine walked off the lingering mad in the cold, clear air. Overhead, the countless sweep of stars shimmered as pinprick lights in an indigo sky. The moon, nearly full, sailed, a round white ship over quiet seas. The air around her moved briskly, carrying the scent of pine and snow and animal. She heard a cow low, an owl call, saw the slinking shadow of one of the barn cats. The two happy mutts, Clyde and Chester, raced around her for a while. Then, since she didn't seem interested in play, they raced off to find their own fun. As the mad cleared, she used the room to lay out a plan for what to do next. She'd need to speak to Abe and Etta, and since her father was right about community and family, she needed to rid herself of resentment before she did. Once rid of it, she still needed to make it clear that the buck started and stopped with her. She'd need to make one of the housekeeping staff temporary head, otherwise she'd end up dealing with the scheduling and minor issues every week. Potentially daily. And she needed to prepare herself, to have another plan waiting in the event the two of her key people decided to retire altogether rather than come back. The idea made her sad. Just sad. Abe and Etta had been key staff at her grandmother's early incarnation of the Dude Ranch, and had stuck with them through all of the changes, all of the expansions. She could and would find qualified replacements, if necessary, but they wouldn't be Abe and Etta, and for some reason, accepting that made her feel lonely as well as sad. She turned toward the stables instead of the shack. Talon could wait a bit longer. After unlatching the big door, she walked inside. Inside, the scents of horses, hay, manure, grain, liniment, and leather. As she walked down the wide, slanted concrete, some equine heads on either side poked out from their stalls. Some blew a greeting, but she continued on where one was watching her, waiting for her.
"Hey there. There's my boy."
She rubbed the cheeks of the Appaloosa she called Leo due to the leopard spots over his white hide. He butted his head against her shoulder, looking at her with his sweet, fascinating blue eyes. A man could miss his girl, she thought. A horse could miss his girl, too.
"I'm sorry. I haven't been around much. I haven't been paying attention. The last couple weeks..."
She shook her head, went inside the stall, took up a brush to run it over his flanks.
"No excuses. Not between us. You know what? Tomorrow, we'll ride to work. You can visit the resort horses for the day, and we'll have a good, strong morning ride. And a good, strong ride home again tomorrow night.
I've missed you, too." She pulled a carrot out of the pocket Leo was nibbling at.
"You always know.
Just don't tell anybody." While he crunched, she laid her head on his neck.
"I'll figure it out, right? I've got it half figured already. I'd still like to boot chase in the ass, but I've got it half figured."
She gave Leo a couple of quick rubs.
"I'll see you in the morning. Bright and early, too."
Since the idea of a good, strong ride pleased her, she wandered out of the stables, scratching a few more heads on the way, before aiming her steps toward the shack. Small, rustic with its cedar shakes and little front porch, it stood a muscular stone's throw from the main house and an enthusiastic spit from the bunkhouse. Originally, it had been built with its peaked roof and square windows for the Dude Ranch. A few other cabins that once were scattered through the trees had been scrapped for supplies in the building of the resort, but they'd kept the shack for the occasional overnight guest, for storage, as a very unofficial playhouse. And now, for Callan Skinner. A horseshoe knocker graced the barn-style front door, but Bodine used her knuckles to knock while she watched the smoke pump out of the chimney on the bunkhouse side of the shack. Callan pulled the door open, stood in the backwash of light. He said,
"Howdy, neighbor."
"Howdy back. Got a minute?"
"Got plenty of them. Did you eat yet?"
"Yeah, I just..." "Oh." When she stepped in, she saw the plate on the table. "You're eating. We can do this later."
"Nothing wrong with now."
To prove it, he shut the door behind her.
"Want a beer?"
"No. I'm good." He crossed back to the table, picked up a remote, and switched off the old black-and-white movie on the TV. It was a small, efficient space, holding the kitchen and living areas, which had been spruced up nice enough by her mother. The bedroom rayed off the kitchen with a bathroom so tiny she wondered how he managed to shower without banging his elbows and knees.
"You going to sit?"
"I really hate to interrupt your dinner."
"You won't, if you sit and talk while I eat it. Take off your coat. The stove keeps it warm enough."
The little potbelly in the corner did its job, Bodine thought, tossing her coat on the back of the living room chair. She sat across from him at the square two-seater table. "You cook?" He cut a bite from a fried-up ribeye.
"Enough to get by. I could have had dinner in the bunkhouse, but I had some things I wanted to get done."
A folder sat beside him, closed now.
"Just in the neighborhood?" he asked her.
"As it happens, I like this neighborhood."
"Me too."
"You didn't get in touch to tell me LaFoy was no damn good, so I hired him."
"You said to get in touch if he was no damn good, and he didn't strike me that way. He's good with the horses, knows his way around, appears to listen when you talk to him, and got on fine with everybody else when we toured around. We had a couple come by just to look at the horses with their preschooler. He was polite and personable. I figured that did the trick, though I wouldn't say he's sharp as an average tack.
Well, I had the same take, so that's good enough. She sat back, sighed. Here's the thing, Skinner. It seems Abe's not coming back until spring. He's worried about Etta, wants to keep her from doing much for a while, so he's taking her to spend time with family here and there, to keep her occupied. Listening, Callan sawed off more steak.
Sounds like a good idea, considering.
We talked about you going back and forth, filling in more come January, but that's not going to work now.
You need to plug that hole all the way.
I do. Dad and Chase both say if you want to switch over to the resort for the winter, that's fine with them. If you want, you and I can talk about salary, as you'd move off the ranch books officially and onto the resorts until Abe comes back. If you don't want that, as you came here to work the ranch's horses, that's fine, too. If that's the case, I'd just like you to keep filling in until I can hire somebody to plug that hole. He scooped up some mashed potatoes, washed them down with beer, said, I've been doing the scheduling for that area and for housekeeping since Etta got sick. I can pull from the staff I have to fill the housekeeping position, but I can't pull from the BAC and Equestrian Center for a horse manager. Even if Maddie wasn't pregnant, she's not a manager. Not yet, anyway. And I don't think she much wants to be. So I'd have to go outside for it. I can do that if you don't want to take it on. He ate some. Thought some.
Can you lay out the details? Salary, yeah, but duties, responsibilities, what kind of autonomy's involved if it's official? Temporary, but official.
Absolutely. It set her mind at ease he'd ask rather than jump to either yes or no. If you give me your email address, I can send it all to you, in writing.
You can have my email. He rattled it off. But if you don't have every detail inside that head of yours, I'll eat my hat. And I like wearing it.
She considered a moment. Beer in there? She wagged a thumb at the refrigerator, then waved him down before he could stand to get it for her. She pulled out a moose head, popped the top in the open mouth of the bull bottle opener on the wall, and took a long sip. I like beer. She took another pull. I like wine fine, but boy, there's nothing like a cold beer. She sat and ran through the job description, the duties, the responsibilities, the expectations, who reported to whom, the liabilities, the resort policies. It was a long list. She paused, drank more beer. Are you sure you don't want this in an email?
I've got it. Most of it makes sense.
She intended to send the email anyway. When she named the salary, he ate more steak. Mulled over.
Seems fair enough.
Good. Do you want to take some time to think about it?
Just want to clear it with Sam and Chase.
I told you they'd cleared it already.
You did. But you didn't hire me on here. They did. I'd like to get their go-ahead in person. Since I expect they'll give it, just as you said, I don't need any time. I'll take you up on it. Though, it causes me some hardship for a few months.
Hardship? How? Taking a pull of his beer, he gave her a long study over the bottle, gray eyes assessing.
Well, it's a tricky business to make a move on you when you're my boss. Sister and daughter of my bosses, tricky enough, but doable. Straight up boss? That's something that'll take some figuring out.
She eyed him over her own beer. We've both got too much to do for you to be putting any moves on me. Or for me to have to dance around them.
Never too much to do for that.
He gave her an amused and considering study.
How good a dancer are you?
I'm very light and quick on my feet, Skinner.
and I really need this to work, so don't complicate it.
It's not my fault you grew up so damn pretty. How about this? You and me make a date. 1st of May, that's a good day. Spring's come around, and you won't be my boss anymore. I'll take you dancing, Bodine.
The fire crackled in the old potbelly, a reminder of heat and flame. You know, Callan, if you'd given me that flirtatious look and that smooth talk when I was 12 going on 13, my heart would have just stumbled right out of my chest. I had such a crush on you. Now his grin didn't flash. The smile came slow and silky.
Is that so?
Oh my, yes. You with your skinny build, half-wild ways, and broody eyes were the object of my desperate affection and awakening hormones for weeks. Maybe even a few months, though at the time it seemed like years. She gestured with her beer. The fact that you and Chase considered me a nuisance at best only added to the secret longing.
I expect we were mean to you half the time.
No, I can't say you were. You crushed my adolescent heart with mild disdain, which is just how boys of 14 and 15 look on girls of 12. And, like a girl of 12 with a first crush, I got over it.
I had more than a couple moments of interest in your direction when you hit about 15.
Surprised, she took a slow sip of beer and decided to use his own words. Is that so?
You took your time blooming, but you got it right. I noticed that.
He rose, got himself another beer, held up a second in offer. She shook her head.
Hard not to notice. Or squash the interest. But that would have put me at, what, about 18? And at 18, I was already thinking about when I'd light out and make my fortune. Added to it, you were my best friend's little sister.
That's never going to change.
But you're not so little anymore. And that 3 years or so difference between us, that doesn't matter once you grow up. Plus, I'm back.
Did you make your fortune, Callan?
I did well enough. More, I did what I needed to do. I learned what I needed to learn. Now I'm back. And for good.
When her eyebrow winged up, he shook his head.
I'm done lighting out. Done needing to. This is my land. It's not about the owning of it, but waking up in the morning knowing you're where you want to be. Having good work to do with good people around you.
His words struck a chord with her. You lost most of the broody.
A good part of the pissed off, too, seeing as they went pretty much hand in hand. Now, about that date.
With a half laugh, she set down the beer and rose. I'll send you the week's schedule. It'll change because some guests wait until they're here to book a riding lesson or a trail ride, and the sleigh rides we'll have going starting next week. She walked over, shrugged into her coat. If you have any questions about how to work it, shoot me an email back, or come to my office.
That's not a yes or no on the 1st of May.
She smiled. It isn't, is it? Thanks for the beer, she added, and strolled out. On a low chuckle, Callan patted a hand over his heart. One of the biggest appeals to his way of thinking of a sassy, contrary woman, especially one with a good, sharp brain, was the challenge presented. He'd never been able to resist a challenge. By the time Billie Jean rang up the last tab and finished the routine closing of the saloon, her feet were barking like her mother's irascible Jack Russell Terrier. She looked forward to getting off them, sliding into bed, even if it was alone, since she'd shown her boyfriend, cheating, lying, no-good bastard, the door a few days before. More, she looked forward to adding the night's tips to her red dress fund. She'd found it while doing some online shopping and had fallen in lust. She visited it in her shopping cart every day, and by her calculations, tonight's tips would allow her to click buy. $149.99. A lot of money for a dress, she thought, as she shut off the lights. But not for this dress. Plus, it was a reward for hard work, and a symbol of her new status as a single woman. She'd wear that red dress her next night off, maybe head on down to the roundup for some drinking and dancing. Then they'd see what's what, she decided, with lingering bitter thoughts of her ex. She wandered out into the cold, heard the crunch of her boots on the gravel stir up the quiet. She'd let the last group of customers linger a little longer than she should have, but those tips added up. And she could sleep half the morning if she wanted. She just loved working the last shift. She got into her car, a second-hand compact SUV she'd be paying off for what right then seemed forever, but it got her where she wanted to go and back again. She headed away from what they called Bodine Town, with its restaurants and shops and offices, wound her way on the unpaved roads, snaking by woods and dark cabins, onto the bumpy corrugation that jostled her kidneys and made her wish she'd stopped in the ladies before she locked up. But once she got to the paved road, she could hit the gas. Her little car could move like a jackrabbit, and at this time of night, the road would be clear as a summer morning. About 15 minutes, she told herself, and she'd be home. Then her car bucked, made a couple of coughing noises, and died.
Well, God damn it! God damn it, what is this?
Snarling, she turned the key, pumped the gas, and when nothing happened, smacked the wheel. What the hell was she supposed to do now? She sat a moment, eyes closed, until she could gather herself. After slamming out of the car, she yanked up the hood. Cursing again, she stomped back to grab a flashlight out of her glove compartment. She could change a tire, and had. She knew how to add water to a radiator, gas to the tank, and check battery cables. Other than that, she might have been staring at a rocket engine. She left the hood up, paced over to kick the front tire before digging her phone out of the purse she'd left on the front seat. Her first instinct was to call Chad, the cheating, lying, no-good ex. Then she remembered they were exes. She considered calling one of her divorced parents, but neither of them lived that close by. She toyed with doing a search for a 24-hour road service or calling her friend Sal. Sal was closer, but she heard an engine, saw the swish of headlights, and thought, "Thank God!" When the truck slowed down, stopped behind her car, Billie Jean hurried over to the driver's window. He said,
"Looks like you need some help."
She gave him her best smile.
"I'd sure appreciate it."
1992. Another Thanksgiving came and went. Alice knew the days by squares and numbers on the calendar. He hadn't taken that away yet. She marked time by it, and tried so hard to imagine herself at home, around the big table in the dining room. Ma making two big turkeys, one for the ranch hands. If she tried hard enough, she could smell it, scenting the kitchen. Grandpa would grill beef, too, and Grammy would glaze a ham, her favorite. And all the trimmings, too. Mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes with marshmallows, green beans, Brussels sprouts. Not her favorite. Biscuits and gravy. She'd make the cranberry sauce. She liked watching the berries pop as they boiled up. Reenie would make deviled eggs. They took time and too much patience. And just when you thought you couldn't eat another bite, all those pies. She imagined herself as a little girl, sitting beside her sister at the kitchen table, making little tarts with the leftover pie dough. Ma humming as she rolled out more. But even as Alice's lips curved, the images wouldn't stick. They flickered and faded away until she was lying on the cot in that terrible room, the irons heavy on her leg, and her arms empty. He'd taken her baby. Though her milk had dried up, painfully, the phantom ache in her breasts remained, a terrible reminder. She escaped into sleep. What else did she have? In sleep, she tried to go back home. Thanksgiving turkey, riding a fast horse while the sky exploded with sunset light. Would she ever see the sun again? Putting on lipstick, buying a new dress, lying out under the summer stars with a boy who wanted her. Would anyone ever touch her with care and sweetness again? She willed herself into her bedroom. Pink walls and movie star posters, the windows bringing the sky and mountains to her. But when she opened her eyes, her reality weighed like lead on her soul. 4 dull walls, a concrete floor, and a locked door at the top of a set of steep steps. No, she'd never see the sun again, its rise or its fall. Her world had no window to bring it to her. No one would ever touch her with care or sweetness, because only Sir existed. Only Sir, who pounded into her every night. And when she screamed because her body hadn't healed from childbirth, he pounded harder and slapped her into silence. She'd never see her bedroom again, so pink and pretty, or sit around the big table at the ranch and share Thanksgiving dinner with her family. She'd never hold her little baby girl again, or Cora with the tiny pink fingers and toes. The loss of it all. The emptiness inside her at the loss of a child she hadn't believed she'd wanted and had loved so much so quickly, smeared every thought like fetid smoke. She ate, because when she refused, he poured soup down her throat, dragging her head back by the hair, pinching her nostrils closed. She washed, because when she stopped, he beat her and scrubbed her with cold water and a hard brush until her skin broke and bled. She begged for her baby. She'd be good. She'd take care. She'd do anything if he gave her baby back to her.
She's somebody else's problem now.
That's what he told her. He had no use for daughters. She hoped he'd beat her to death, but he seemed to know just how far he could go. He wouldn't let her die as she wanted. Just let her die. Let her slide away into sleep, where she could sit on the front porch rocker, looking at the mountains while she sang to her baby. If she'd had something sharp, she'd have used it to slit her own throat. No. No, his first, she thought, all but dreamed, lying on the cot, eyes shut tight so she didn't have to see her prison. Yes, she'd kill him first. Than herself. She wondered if she could somehow sharpen one of the plastic spoons he brought her with her meals, or her toothbrush. Maybe her toothbrush. She could try. She would try. But God, she was just so tired. She only wanted to sleep. As her mind drifted, she imagined tearing up her sheet, making a noose. There was nothing to hang it on, but maybe if she tied it to one of the steps, wrapped it tight enough around her neck, she could choke herself. She couldn't go on this way. Couldn't wake day after day, night after night in this terrible place, knowing he'd come down those stairs. Worse, even worse than the brutality, the rapes, were all the endless hours of aloneness. An aloneness that grew deeper, wider, blacker, without her child. She made herself get up, studied the sheet with dull, listless eyes. Should she tear it into strips? Braid the pieces? Would that make it stronger for what she needed? So hard to concentrate when every thought had to fight through a fog. She toyed with the sheet, looking for weak spots, easy-to-tear spots. The concept of killing herself seemed no more frightening than solving a routine math problem. Even less so. But she had to wait, she reminded herself. He'd come down soon. Wait until after he leaves again. Killing herself might take some time. Today, she thought with a tired sigh. She could die today. Escape. She stood again, but this time the room swayed. No, she realized. She swayed, and her stomach pitched. She barely made it to the toilet, dropping to her knees as that pitching stomach emptied. Clammy. Queasy. She caught her breath. Sicked up more. Tears came as she curled on the floor, breathless, shivering. Tears of grief. And a strange kind of joy. She heard the locks thunk. Heard his boot steps. Heavy. Heavy. Shoving herself up, bracing on the sink, as her head still spun a little, she faced him. She found her hate again, as the long fog lifted into a terrible clarity. Placing a hand on her belly, still saggy and loose from giving birth, she found a reason to live again. "I'm pregnant," she told him. He nodded.
"It best be a son this time. Now clean yourself up and eat your breakfast."
Chapter 6. Present Day. In the apple-crisp morning, with the eastern sky abloom with rose and gold, Bodine shouldered her briefcase and strode toward the stables. She heard the chickens humming the way they did, while Chester and Clyde had their morning wrestling match outside the bunkhouse. The dogs broke off their tumbling to race to her, tongues lolling, eyes bright, as if they hadn't seen her in a month. Nothing much started the day off with a laugh like a couple of madly happy dogs, so she rubbed and scratched them into insanity until they picked up their wrestling match. She waved to a couple of out-and-about ranch hands, spoke casually to a couple more busy mucking stalls in the stables. She stopped short when she saw Callan in his sheepskin jacket, comfortably worn boots, and dung-brown Stetson settling a saddle on the impressive Sundown's back. "Going for a ride?" she asked him. He glanced over.
"Sundown needs to stretch his legs, and I can use him at the resort today."
"He's an asset. He can go on the books, too, if you want."
"No need for that."
While Callan cinched the saddle, the horse turned his head, nipped the hat off Callan's head.
"What have I told you about that?"
Sundown merely stuck his head over the low door, offering Bodine the hat.
"Why, thank you. It's a nice hat."
"It won't be if he keeps playing with it." "Something you need?"
"I've got what I need, and that's a horse of my own who needs to stretch his legs. I'm riding to work this morning."
"It's a good morning for it."
"I'll wait for you.
We might as well ride over together." "Can I have my hat back, boss?"
She passed it over to him as she turned to walk to Leo's stall, heard Callan's frustrated,
"Now cut that out!"
As she saddled Leo, she wondered if she could teach him a couple of tricks. With his fondness for carrots and peppermint treats, bribery could work. She heard the stable hands hooting with laughter. When she led Leo out, she saw why. Sundown sat on the concrete run with the patient air of a man taking a break in an easy chair, while Callan leaned against the stall door, scrolling through his phone.
"That horse beats all, Cal," one of the hands called out. "He beats all to hell and back."
Callan looked over, smiled at Bodine.
"Ready?"
"I am. Are you?"
Callan pushed off the door, took Sundown's reins.
"Let's get going."
The horse pushed to his feet with the same indolent ease as his owner. After a short study, a little nose snorting, the horses apparently deemed each other acceptable. In the stable yard, Bodine swung into the saddle. I had a route in mind, one that'll give Leo a good run.
That'll work.
They start.